Media Production.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of the Cold Shower Podcast after a brief hiatus, maybe about a 1 month hiatus or so. If I keep taking these breaks, I should probably just stop acknowledging them and just operate under the understanding that I'll post episodes when I get around to it. But as for the month of October, I have a conversation lined up for every single week, and I'm starting to look towards November. So I do think that consistency will be something that we're going to get back to, as I used to really hang my hat on consistency. And that has changed since I went into business for myself with Cold Shower Media, which I should mention, we just entered our second year of business and we have some really cool projects in the works. And I am having a blast working with people on their own podcasts, whether that's companies or individuals that want to do limited series podcasts. Like, hey, I just want to do 4 to 10 episodes of a limited series. Can you help me out? In which case I say, yes, I can. Or I have some clients that are like, hey, I'm committed to this thing long-term and I want to pay you monthly to help with production services. And we're continuing to do that heading into the second year as well. And I have just some other things kind of business related, but just exciting that I'm hoping I can share with you guys in the coming months too. But as for this show specifically, this was a really cool conversation that I had with a dear friend of mine, Tom Gordon. Tom has been on the show multiple times and has also kind of, for me, the last couple of years served as a bit of a mentor. I always like to bounce things off of him because of the knowledge that he has in history and how whatever we're facing, you know, in today's landscape, he can put it into better perspective than I can because of his knowledge of past events. So I wanted to discuss with him something that's really been weighing pretty heavily on me, and that is freedom versus, but also maybe freedom and the common good. And I was framing it first as freedom versus the common good. And then in discussions with him, he was kind of saying, what if it's freedom and the common good? And I think you'll find out through the course of our conversation that there's almost always an overlap of the two. And so even though right now, especially amidst the pandemic and amidst conversations surrounding vaccination and masking and all those things, where some people are really clinging to this idea of freedom, and then other people are saying, no, we have to drop all of our personal comforts and just contribute to the common good. While I still have some leanings like that, I do see now, after having talked with him, that there is more of an overlap than what I maybe have initially thought. Now, I am not in any way saying that you should abandon your convictions, particularly if your convictions are in service of other people. But maybe these are conversations that we need to continue to have and understand, I guess, where people are coming from, especially looking at the broader scope of history. So I really hope that you enjoy this conversation that I had with Tom Gordon. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of the Cold Shower Podcast. We have a return guest. Tom, I don't know if this is your second or third time, but it might be, is it your third?
Third and a half,
okay.
I think.
Okay. I think so. Cause we discussed the ranked choice voting and you were in on that conversation.
Yes,
so
yes.
That would have been the second official time. But just for people that need a reminder, go ahead and just introduce yourself. Tell us what you're about.
Sure. Tom Gordon, originally from California's Central Coast, grew up surfing there. I've been teaching at NMC in the history and philosophy departments, this is my 25th year. So,
excellent. And I had reached out to Tom to come in and have another conversation with me because I have been thinking quite a bit about, freedom and what that means for really anybody in this country, as well as the common good and what that's meant for us as well. And so just having a discussion about freedom and the common good, where those things might overlap, and really just riffing on some of this stuff. When we had done a little pre-meeting, you had said, you know, I don't know that I'm going to have specific answers, but I think we can have a response for some of the questions of today and maybe also by looking at history, which you do so well. So I was looking up some things, trying to gather my thoughts, and there was a article, this was in the Denver Post, and it talks about individual rights versus the common good, of course, during the coronavirus pandemic. But there was just this little paragraph that caught me, and I think it'll frame for people pretty well what we might try to talk about. So it says, from the moment the American Republic was born, right up until today, The hallmark has been me and we, different flavors of freedom that compete but overlap, living together but often at odds. The history of the United States and the colonies that formed it has been a 413-year balancing act across an assortment of topics, priorities, passions, and ambitions. What do you think about that?
Gosh, it reminds me of a pithy little saying that at one level doesn't say much, but I like it. And it goes like this. My freedom ends where yours begins. And it's not terribly directive, but it's a good thing for me to think about. There are limits on my freedom, mm-hmm. and there ought to be.
Yeah. So that saying, yeah, has come up a lot for me, you know, or really probably anybody the last year or so. So my freedom ends where yours begins. And that to me is, it's a simple thing. And I guess on the surface, it makes a lot of sense, but then it seems like people really just want to get into the nitty gritty of like, well, maybe I'm going to have my freedom begin in a spot that you're not comfortable with. And so it's right. going to be much easier for you to overlap and cross those boundaries.
Exactly. I mean, it just screams for detail, mm-hmm. right? Gosh, it gets me thinking about so many things, so many directions this could go. Law, for example, you know, what is law but a form of moral mathematics? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't like things to be quite that loosey-goosey. My freedom ends where yours begins. Okay, let's start defining all this stuff and see if we can reduce it to a math equation, which is tempting. We like that. But I think the temptation leads us inevitably to binary thinking, mm-hmm. which can be appropriate at times. Mathematics is a place where binary thinking is perfectly appropriate. Human freedom, ethics, not so easy there to say that we're going to be able to reduce all this to a simple law code or something along those lines. And mm-hmm. gosh, there's just a whole history of how we came to be binary thinkers. And I think that that's one of the problems when we're dealing with freedom is we want to think in these very often on black and white sort of terms, and doesn't always work out.
Part of what I was thinking about this morning is that maybe this is with the introduction of social media, but also just people's willingness to, I think, share their views, and social media just makes it that much easier. You know, is it more difficult for me to live in harmony with my neighbor because I know what they think and believe versus when it was kind of just a mystery and I could just respect that person for them being my neighbor as opposed to letting their thoughts, their opinions, their views factor in into how I might be treating them.
Oh, that's insightful. Yeah, I think to the extent that your neighbor is willing to put out their beliefs and attitudes and biases out on social media, I think it does make it harder to live with them. Or in the rare instance where you are totally on board with them, maybe easier in a sense to form your tribe around them, mm-hmm. but your tribe is formed in opposition to other tribes.
Yeah.
Which ultimately is going to break down at some level, you know, when it comes to being neighborly. Mm-hmm. Maybe me and my neighbor are against those neighbors over there, and now we're not neighbors at all.
Yeah. 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 It's difficult stuff to sift through. And it's actually exactly why I've been interacting less on social media for that reason. I just felt like if I couldn't interact as often as I was on social media, while maintaining a value for other people, then one of those has to go. And so it's either, well, just don't value people and keep up your social media, or, you know, let's cut back on that stuff and just start to love people again. Which has led me to this question of, and I don't know if this is one of those things that can be answered, but we've seen people, I think, really value one over the other, which is either this exercise of what they've deemed to be freedom, mm-hmm. versus this exercise of I'm going to contribute to what I think is the common good. And both of those groups, while I might agree with one versus the other more so, both of those groups, I do think have these intentions of wanting something better in the future. They're just uncertain and can't agree with others on how that's best attained.
Yeah. I wonder if they aren't maybe too certain about what they think is best. And my, aren't you a dim-witted knucklehead for not seeing it? Mm-hmm. That's definitely a problem. You know, I think about, I don't know, we might be able to make this relate and might end up just cutting it right out. But the tragedy of the commons, I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but it comes out of England or someplace, but it's pretty simple. You have this situation where maybe there's a pasture that is held in common by the community. And it turns out that it's ideal for supporting up to 100 sheep in a healthy, excellent fashion. But there's only 5 sheep on it, mm-hmm. and they belong to you. And I see how fat and healthy your sheep are, so I add 5. And maybe you add a few more, and I add a few more, and somebody else gets an idea, and they add a few more. And pretty soon we're getting up to 100, and we see all these fat, healthy sheep, and we're thinking, wow, this is great. We can all have fat, healthy sheep on this. And pretty soon we're at 110, 150, and now they're not looking so good anymore. And how do we start regulating the common good in this matter? And they're blurry lines because we don't, you know, ultimately, we usually don't know what that ideal number is in a mm-hmm. case like this.
Yeah. Well, that's oddly enough, I really don't want to quote George Orwell because he's someone that's been quoted pretty heavily the last year or so by people that probably haven't read any of his books. And so that's what makes it kind of funny. But I did just listen to his book, Animal Farm, and I see some of that in that book. I don't know if you've read that one, but essentially I'm going to spoil it for people. The animals take over this farm because they've deemed that the farmer doesn't have their best interest in mind and that they can grow the crops and they can do all these things more efficiently and be able to really provide for one another. And so they set these laws of, you know, animals don't kill one another and animals don't drink alcohol. Animals don't wear clothes. 4 legs are always better than 2. And they are rallied around those ideas, maybe almost like a constitution.
Right.
And then eventually the pigs, who are the most intelligent of the farm animals, are just slowly eroding the values and finding ways that they themselves can get ahead while keeping some of the other animals in the dark. And eventually the story ends where the pigs have started to work in tandem with other local farms in order to make business deals. And they've started wearing the old farmer's clothes. They're sleeping in his bed. They've decided that the other animals can stay out in the cold because they're the smartest and they've helped accomplish the most good. They deserve to stay in the house and all these things. And eventually it ends with the farm animals looking through the window of the house where the pigs are having a meeting with other farmers and they have physically turned more human and they can no longer tell the difference between the pigs who at one time had their best interest in mind and the humans with their greed. And I just thought that that was really interesting because we have these ideas of this perfect world and that how we want to go about attaining it is the best way of doing that. Yet we have to rub shoulders with people who have other ideas about how best to attain the, you know, harmony, I guess.
Right. Right. Makes me think of John Rawls and his Veil of Ignorance. You may have heard of this before. What Rawls, he was a political philosopher, but he said, imagine that you are trying to create rules, laws for a society, and you have no idea what your gender is, color of your skin, mm-hmm. whether or not you are born with legs. You don't know
right.
any of it. It's a veil of ignorance. So how are you going to build your society based on that? And it's a thought provoking exercise mm-hmm. for the mind.
Yeah. Cause we like to categorize things.
We do.
And how would we build? There has to be a hierarchy, right? Doesn't there? Or has there ever been a society where there's not a hierarchy?
Well, that's a good question. Racking the brain. There have been more or less egalitarian societies, but there's usually an organizing principle. You know, in the ancient world, it would have been the priests and the very high royalty kind of running things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so I feel like hierarchies are a result of categorization. And as soon as you start to categorize, then you hold one category above another and all of a sudden you have these hierarchies.
Right. So if you play the John Rawls scenario out and you don't know, you know, am I going to be a janitor or am I going to be the president or the emperor? Am I male, female, black, white? I don't know. It's one of my favorite mind exercises in terms of just thinking about how humans ought and perhaps can live together.
Right. Yeah. I think it would be an important thing to just revisit, and you could apply it then to the individual reactions that you're having with people too. How would I be treating this person if I didn't know that they looked this way or that they thought that way? Yeah, that's really, it's really interesting. The reason why I guess I wanted to discuss freedom and the common good is also just for the fact that sometimes we hear the term, you know, the good old days or when America was in a better place than it is now. And those things were thrown around even pre-pandemic. So obviously I think life is a little bit more difficult for everybody just because there was a pandemic. But I was looking at some of the research and, you know, it was asking both Republicans and Democrats, when do you think America was great? And even the Republicans and the Democrats kind of had, within the Republicans, they couldn't all agree. There wasn't like a specific decade that they all agreed upon. And same thing for Democrats. And we already know that Republicans and Democrats don't necessarily agree on much. But there were some years that stood out. So say Republicans thought that the 1950s and the 1960s were when the good old days were prevalent, as well as the year 2000. And we know that 9/11 happened shortly after that. And 2000 also stood out pretty heavily for Democrats, which I kind of thought was interesting. But this idea that people have in their minds, we have to get back to something. We have to get back to when it was good. And sometimes we have this failure to realize that it wasn't necessarily good for everybody. And the example I want to give is when we look back at the anniversary of 9/11 and we remember all these times where people came together and we think if we could just get back to that place of unity, we would be so much better off. And I think there are aspects of that that are really, really true. And I had shared, you know, the sense of unity that I felt as a little kid and that I saw playing out in the community when 9/11 first happened. I had another college professor who has been on my podcast, and he said just something additional to think about is that sometimes that unity was just a shared hatred for people in the Middle East. And so was that really unity if it's just channeling our hatred towards a group where we have many of those people living in our country too? And so it's just really hard to put your finger on a moment where we had unity or where it was actually the good old days, right?
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, I'm racking my mind going back through American history, and you can see many times when Americans pull together, right, in air quotes, and they're pulling together in defense of each other against a common enemy. Great Britain, right, during the Revolutionary War. Yeah, it goes on and on. I mean, the space race pulling together in opposition to the Soviet Union, the various Red Scares. So, yeah, that's hard. And if you look at something like, say, the 1950s were a time of economic boom. One of the major reasons for that is that European factories were bombed out and ruined. You know, there was no competition from them for the U.S. to have their economic boom. So yeah, that's great for folks in the U.S. at a level. But it was built largely on the ruin of Europe, you know, not intentionally by the Americans. It just, that was the reality. 1920s, you saw the same thing, European factories in smoking ruins. And what happens in the U.S.? We have the roaring 20s. We have this great boom time.
We all want to get someplace better, right? As a whole, as a country. And I guess my question is that more likely to be achieved? And this might be an opinion portion. Is that more likely to be achieved through groups of people who think that they're exercising freedom and that through that exercise of freedom, you're going to be able to attain greatness versus those who can kind of put aside some of their personal freedoms for the common good? I have thoughts about that. But I guess I don't know, being in a country where, you know, its founding was right? People seeking a new type of freedom. And so it's hard to argue against the roots of that.
Well, they weren't, the Americans weren't exactly seeking a new type of freedom. They were seeking to continue to enjoy the freedom they had known.
Okay.
So in contrast to the French Revolution, for example, where they, where everybody was seeking a new type of freedom, the French Revolution failed because it was so revolutionary. The American Revolution succeeded because it was minimally revolutionary. Mm. You know, in the early years, they wanted to get away from everything that smelled of Great Britain, right? Mm. So they wrote the Articles of Confederation, which gave lots of power to the states and very little to a federal government. And within a few years, the whole thing is about to collapse. Mm. So they call a constitutional convention and they get back to what they know, right? And what they know is the British parliamentary system, where you have you know, the parliament with its House of Lords and its House of Commons. What have we got? We've got our Senate, that's their House of Lords. We've got our House of Representatives. They had the prime minister as the executive branch, right? So we got back to what we knew. Mm. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it raises a whole question about conservatism and liberalism. You know, I have a very warm spot and a very cold spot for both.
Yeah.
When it comes to tearing down a fence, for example, do you tear down a fence just because it's there? There might be a charging bull on the other side, mm-hmm. right? And there's a reason for that fence. On the other hand, that field might've been empty for the last 20 years and the fence is in the way of progress. Let's tear the fence down. Mm-hmm. It seems like one of the things we really fail at nowadays is giving careful thought to the fences that exist and whether we should conserve them, right? Or whether we should bulldoze them. Mm-hmm. And there are appropriate times for both. What seems to be missing is the careful thought that goes into it before the bulldozing or the defending of the fence or whatever the case.
So what is the careful thought? What, in its purest form, what should that include? Should that include ideas from both sides?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the very notion, there isn't a listener I can imagine out there who would think, you know, conservatives always have all the best ideas all the time, or that liberals have always the best ideas all the time. It just logically doesn't even hold water. When we get together and we talk through things, I'm not suggesting that moderates have all the best ideas either. I'm just saying there are a lot of ideas to be had out there, and we need to carefully consider all of them across the spectrum and be willing to move past simple notions like guilt by association. So one of the things I'll tell my students, usually the first week of class, is, you know, both Trump and nowadays Biden on occasion do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And if you can't wrap your mind and your heart around that, you are part of the problem.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of people that do that, and I'm guilty of that. You know, I spoke out very openly against Trump throughout his presidency. And I know that I lost some respect and support, and a lot of people have, and that happens both ways. Like, people are very ready right now, ready and willing to sacrifice personal friendships and relationships for over politics. And, I think that might go back to my question about, you know, being neighbors and honoring someone. Is it better to know how people really feel about things, or is it better not to know and be able to just treat them as a person that doesn't have these things that I might disagree with? It's really tough. I would like to be in a spot where I can value someone even while knowing, you know, that I might disagree with them, but that has taken and is going to continue to take practice.
Yeah. It's a good question. You know, one of my favorite quotes, it's attributed to Aristotle, but I honestly don't know if it comes from him, but I love it. It's essentially this. It is the mark of an educated mind to consider an opinion without adopting it. What is the harm in listening to each other?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the inverse of that, what is the potential good that comes from listening to each other? Mm-hmm. We need to listen to each other.
Yeah. It's murky waters to traverse because there are so many things that are being labeled opinions when they're just flat out wrong. So you have people that are saying, well, you know, this is just my opinion, so you have to listen to it. And it's like, well, actually, that has been proven to be incorrect. And so you need to be the one to move off of that opinion because it's just wrong. And, right. and so we also have an unwillingness to do that, where we hold an opinion so close that we're not willing to backtrack on it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're in interesting moments. And the thing that it's hard not to use examples from the last year or so, especially with COVID, but I have talked about my vaccination status and my willingness to get vaccinated because of all the options out on the table, I firmly believe that that's the one that's going to get us out of the pandemic, is having enough people get vaccinated. And that brings up a lot of issues in terms of, well, what about mandates and all those different types of things. Mm-hmm. And while I disagree pretty heavily with someone who has decided not to get vaccinated, I do think, and I've had to force myself to understand, that if in these moments they're valuing their freedom, and I'd like to get your take on this. I believe that some of those people that have taken stances on things like, say, vaccines and not getting vaccinated or not wearing a mask in certain establishments or whatever, and saying that that is the exercise of their freedom, as much as I might disagree with that, I do believe that they think that they are still preserving a future of freedom for their neighbor that they might disagree with. So does that make sense? So if in this scenario, I'm the sheep that is willing to mask up and willing to get vaccinated, and then there's the counterbalance of people who are not willing to do those things, I kind of, in some weird way, think that they're helping me fight for freedom in the future. Like, yeah, you can participate in some of these overreaches, but I'm not going to, and you're going to benefit from the freedom that I ensured 10 years down the line. Do you understand that?
I'm working on it.
Okay. There are people who do not want to participate in what I would think is the common good because they're looking down the line and saying, if I do, then we're running the risk of there being less freedom in the future.
Which is also a common good. That.
Yeah. Which is a common good.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
I think I see what you're saying.
And I can kind of understand that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to live within that though.
Well, seems like we can honestly come to differences of opinion and still walk away friends.
Maybe
that sounds overly simplistic, but maybe it is that simple.
And then if our physical health is being put at risk by some of those people, do we remain friends but keep physical distance? You know, I mean, there's so many things. We're being tested in every single way, and we're fighting almost an uphill battle of valuing your neighbor. It's like everything that the world is throwing at us is giving us opportunities to hate each other, essentially.
Yes. Yes. And there's nothing new in that. I wonder what has been the tipping point that makes it so in our faces now. Mm-hmm. And I guess I want to blame everything on social media, but it seems like maybe that's the culprit.
Yeah. I would lean that way. And I can just speak from my personal experience. There were moments, say through the police brutality protests and the stances that I took on that and the need that I saw and still see for police reform. There were people that I was just boiling mad over their lack of compassion, their lack of understanding regarding the situation, their inability to really understand where people that are experiencing pain are coming from. And that they're not just making it up. And I was very angry with those people, and I was seeking this justice. And since I've tailed back my social media, that has given myself an opportunity not to just be burning like white hot with anger all the time. And while I can still see a need for change, I'm not so engrossed by the views of people that I disagree with that it's like clouding my ability to value other people, other American citizens. Right.
Right.
So I do blame social media quite a bit over that.
Yeah. Maybe we need some restrictions.
Mm-hmm. I think we should self-impose some restrictions. You're healthier for it.
You know, you get to a good point. Are we less civil because of the availability to communicate the ways we do today, which we couldn't 20 years ago. It's interesting, the entire notion of civilization is built upon self-control, right? So, yeah, it seems that we need some personal redemption and reformation and self-control to relearn how to live together. Mm-hmm. I got to think more on that.
Well, I think that brings up the point of you might have groups of people who say, well, we're lacking morality in this area, and so we need to impose laws to protect people from the immoral. And then there's other people who are saying, well, I think, you know, it just falls on the individual. And so we need less laws, and we just need this kind of reformation like you're talking about. And where that one goes wrong, just like I think imposing too many laws can go wrong, where that goes wrong is that that's just leaving room for those that are not going to practice that self-control. And so then they're going to continue to do the same things, and there's going to be no repercussions for them. And this isn't new, like you said, none of this is necessarily new, but it really is in your face with social media.
Yeah, it is. I'm wondering about, you know, we in the West, we stake a lot on civilization, law, the rule of law, as opposed to the rule of men, the difference being essentially everybody in a given, under a given government, if they're under the rule of law, they are all under the rule of law.
Okay.
In the United States, we consider ourselves that way. Now, of course, there are exceptions, but those exceptions are outside of the ideal, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, let me just move to the rule of men. Maybe this will help. So the rule of men is you have, say, an all-powerful king or monarch mm-hmm. who can just say, this is the way it's going to be for all the rest of y'all, and I'm going to do what I want, yeah. Right? So we hang a lot on the rule of law versus the rule of men.
Rule of party is what I'm thinking, you know, because we have these two parties, these two prevailing parties mm-hmm. that kind of all think, both think that they have the best ideas, and they will point to one side or the other side and say, man, you're guilty of this overreach. You're guilty of that overreach mm-hmm. and forgetting that their players are doing the same exact thing. I mean, we've seen that play out very clearly where both sides are guilty of a lot of the same things, mm-hmm. but it's just kind of like, you know, doing, what's that saying? Doing evil for good or whatever.
Yeah.
The means to an end.
Yeah. The means or the ends justify the means.
Yes. Right. So, well, we can do that because our overarching idea is much more righteous than yours is. And so it's okay if we do sure. that versus you doing that to achieve your ends.
Right. You see that when the party of the president, you know, switches over. So, you know, for one side, the president's personal character, really matters when they're not in your party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Right.
But then when they are, well, that's just a personal thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In our last few minutes, let's really hammer on the freedom versus the common good. And I was trying to think of like where I land on this outside of maybe just the first year or this most recent year where I really feel like I've contributed to the common good through most of my actions when I'm out in public. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder if I've gotten so used to the certain freedoms that we have in this country that I almost am like forgetting to value freedom in some ways. Does that sound right? I mean, I don't know if you've seen some of the stuff that's taking place, say in Australia, with their government and some of their mandates that are much more restrictive than what we've had happening here. And I do wonder if I was in those situations, would I be as willing to participate in what I deem the common good, you know, in the situation that I'm currently in, which is in rural northern Michigan in the United States?
Mm, yeah. Good point. I don't know that I have anything to add to that.
Yeah. Is it just a matter of people looking at their specific point in time that they're living, their specific situations, and determining like what serves, do you ask, I guess, what serves you best or what serves others best? That is the whole question, right?
Well, it is. It really is. And there are two pillars that Western civilization is built on. One is the Greeks and their love of reason and philosophy, and carried forward by the Romans with their love of law. Mm-hmm. The other pillar is the Hebrews, right? With their monotheistic approach to life. So one is tribal, right? The Hebrews, and the other is very secular, the Greeks. And we have both those pillars alive and well today throughout the West, and I'd say especially in the U.S., and they don't always get along, and yet they both kind of support the structure. Mm. It's a weird dance, and I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. Yeah. We've always been a very tribal and yet a very secular culture at the same time. And you can see, the one, it seems, is going to really value individual freedom, where the other is going to value the community freedom and health.
They both think that there's power in each one. And so there's power in the individual being able to pursue what they deem best for themselves. And there's power in the community, but we can't figure out which one is more powerful, I guess.
And they're both right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and maybe that's the thing we really struggle with. We want to be able to bring binary thinking to bear on these problems, and we find it inadequate. And so we throw away this bit of thinking and try to find some other binary thinking. It's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. I think of, this may have come up in an earlier podcast, C.S. Lewis's example from the garden shed.
Yeah.
Where he's out in the garden shed, the door closes behind him, and it's pitch black in there, except for a little shaft of light that's coming through the door. And he looks at it, at the light, and he can see dust particles floating in the light. Then he steps into the shaft of light and looks along the light. He sees through the crack in the door. He sees the trees outside. He sees the sun producing that light millions of miles away. And the fact of the matter is that both experiences are correct. They're both right. Right. Now he can't, as he's looking along the light, he doesn't see the dust particles anymore, by the way. Right. Yeah. But both are true. And it's really interesting. I take that all the way back to the scientific revolution in the West, where the dominant way of trying to understand reality was to look at things, right? Put it under a microscope, put it in a beaker, heat it up, cool it down. And science has had thrust upon it the burden of defining reality. But science is really best at looking at things, but not along things. Mm-hmm. We really need both. We need to look at, we need to look along. And sometimes they appear to be contradictory, but they can both be true. And I think we lose subtleties like that when we try to reduce everything to just a mathematical formula, theory of everything, if you will.
Yeah. So it's just good exercise to look along and through, right? Or
To look at which along, is what the sciences do. Picture a microscope, right? I'm looking at a slide, right? But looking along something, you know, and there are exceptions to this. You could look at an alcoholic, for example, stumbling down into the gutter and puking on himself and all that kind of stuff. And it's enough to look at that. You don't need to look along alcoholism to know you don't want to be an alcoholic. So there are exceptions, right? But again, exceptions is a way of saying, let's not be binary in our thinking here, right? let's allow for some nuance.
Okay. So if I ask Tom Gordon, I want to try to get to 40 minutes here. So we got three more to go. So if I ask you in 2021, what do you feel like you're leaning more heavily towards in this moment? Is it freedom or is it trying to participate in the common good? Is there even a lean one way or the other?
Well, my gut feeling and reaction would be leaning toward the common good. Freedom is, as American as apple pie, right? And I am very American. But you know, a lot of folks died on foreign battlefields, gave up their ultimate chance at freedom so that I could have mine. Mm-hmm. I think, and that's a common good sort of situation. So I think maybe acknowledging that freedom requires sacrifice is maybe a way to try to look at and to look along this situation issue. Yeah. I'm struggling right now for the words, but.
Oh, I got it. And I was definitely going to say that I'm leaning more towards the common good, but after having given your answer, I can see that they feed into each other, and that dying on foreign battlefields is a great example, because you have these people who are participating in the common good for an ideal of freedom that they themselves then didn't even get to experience. Right. And I'm wondering, you know, while there's nothing as harsh as going to a foreign battlefield taking place for me right now, are there similar opportunities in my life where I can do one of those things, of those things? That's really something to chew on.
You know, what's a really good exercise, I think, for anybody is when you're considering the truth of a matter, you know, what's real, is to first maybe ask yourself, what do I want to be real? Mm. And then be suspicious of that. Doesn't mean to doubt it thoroughly or throw it away, but just to be aware that, you know, I carry a bias into this thing. And I really want this thing to be real, but maybe it's not. What else might be true?
That's great. Yeah. I think we'll just end with that, because that is a great exercise, whether you feel like you're leaning towards freedom at all costs and, or you're leaning towards the common good. That's something, to think about. It's just, what do I want to be true? And then examining that is a very helpful exercise, something I'm definitely going to do. So Tom, as always, I appreciate you coming in studio and discussing some of these things. It's really helpful and gives me, I guess, a fresh perspective in areas where I've otherwise been pretty frustrated examining some of this stuff. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. We love you. Bye-bye.